Welcome to Classics Now, the radio program of the North Coast Great Books Discussion Group. I am Solomon Huberta, joined as always by the mellifluous Mary Harper for yet another selection from the bookshelf of classics from the ages. Mary, what do we have this month?
We're reading the histories written by Herodotus back in the 5th century B.C. It's he's called the father of history, although some people also call him the father of lies.
Hey, now, watch it.
It was a fascinating book, although history, it meant inquiry in Greek, not the history that we think of. And it had been written in pieces before, the little Greek states, everyone had told their own story. There were annals for the Persians and for the Egyptians. But no one had tried the kind of truly huge, broad canvas that Herodotus brought to this work.
It was different, too. They were keeping a record of things that occurred, but not so like really getting into the story. They're really finding out what happened, why, going back and getting into it.
Right, and he's talking about the Persian, the war between Persia and the Greek states.
Yes, the two times they came.
Right.
The once and then the succeeding generations.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. And he goes all the way back through to Cyrus, who was one of the first real empire builders in Persia. And long before any of this happened, he builds up all what happens, how the Persians got to be where they were, and then how the Greeks got to be where they were. And along the line, because so many places were conquered, he describes the Egyptians and the Scythians and all these wild, strange groups that were around at that time. So it's truly a huge, broad canvas that he's painting here, trying to narrow it down to why this war was fought and how they were brought to the table.
Yes, yes.
The quote on the back of my book is a great one, and it's early on in the book. It says, "No one is fool enough to choose war instead of peace. In peace, sons bury fathers, but in war, fathers bury sons." This was Croesus that was speaking. I think everyone's heard of Richard Croesus. And Croesus thought he had it made, and even talked to Solon, the lawgiver from Greece, who said, "Hey, don't you think I'm the happiest guy in the world?" And Solon said, "No, you're still alive, and things can still go wrong for you."
Yeah. He said the true measure of a man's benefit and his how well he did is you could check with him after he dies.
Right, exactly.
Then you can find out how his life went.
One of the interesting things about this book was that there are all these little side stories. He collects the stories of a culture, for one thing, and he's pretty good about telling you, now, this is just what people say. He's not saying that it's true. It's just, this is the story these people tell.
I love it.
But there's a lot of them, and they're really fascinating. And you had a favorite, I think, about some engineers.
Oh, well, I mean, it wasn't too fantastic. I thought it was true, maybe. but anyway, I mean, throughout the book, there's a lot of references, like the selling of the wives at the market, and that scene, and then the depiction of women isn't necessarily always that good. But I was surprised to find in the beginning there's this whole section about where this queen who's like takes on this engineering feat to like reroute the Euphrates River, and like this is a big deal. And so ladies were taking care of business,
and it worked.
Well, and then the one thing, and then after that, she in her tomb she says. She puts a little note on her tomb that says, "If any king in Babylon is hereafter is short of money, let him open my tomb and take as much as he likes. But this must be done only in case of need. Whoever opens my tomb under any other circumstances will get no good of it." And so then after a while, it stays there. Nobody bothers it. But then finally some king comes and he opens the tomb and he says, and there's nothing in there. And there's a little note that says, "If you had not been so insatiably greedy and eager to get money by the most despicable means, you would never have opened the tomb of the dead."
And there was nothing there.
Nothing, right. No money there for it. Yeah, I was like, that's awesome. But like, and he even, Herodotus sees like very clearly it's a joke. He even says this is a great little like
prank,
the prank that she pulled on,
right.
She pulled out of it. And it's just, the book is full of stuff like this. It's like how many hundreds of pages long? 800, 900 pages. It's ridiculous.
It's great. Well, let's put this in context a little bit. Herodotus is born in 484. The major battles we're talking about here in the first Persian attack on Greece is the Battle of Marathon, and that was in 490, which was just before he was born. And then the Battle of Thermopylae, which the Greeks lost, was in 480, so he would have been a young child. And Salamis was also in 480. And then the Persians were finally routed out of Greece in 479. Mm-hmm. So this all, it wasn't ancient history to him. It happened while he was alive, a lot of it. So there were people he could talk to. Now, he does a lot of making up the conversations, like between a king and his advisor, for instance. And we were talking in book club last night about how he had to have made that up. But then I was thinking, he could have talked to someone who was there, and people remembered things a lot more clearly because it was an oral history society. So although he probably did make them up, they might have been closer to the truth than we thought, at least sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I was really moved, and I think a lot of people have been moved by the story. Probably a little more Greek attitude than the Persian attitude at the time. But Xerxes, the third king there, the big time king, is looking over his troops and feeling how awesome and amazing he is. And then he starts to like just weep, and his servant comes up and says, "My lord, surely there is strange contradiction in what you do now and what you did a moment ago. Then you called yourself a lucky man, and now you weep." And Xerxes replies, "I was thinking, and it came to my mind how pitifully short human life is. For of all these thousands of men, not one will be alive in 100 years' time."
Life is short.
He's like on top of the world, and he just has to be like, you know what, actually, what is all this stuff?
Yeah,
and that's through the book is kind of a theme of like, the wheel of life and how the fortunes change, and just don't feel so sure of yourself.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Your hubris will catch up to you.
Yeah, the battles are really interesting. Of course, the Greek states had had their taste of freedom. They had had their taste of tyranny too, and overthrown it. And but they were constantly fighting. I mean, they're like a bunch of kids in the schoolyard. They're constantly fighting each other. And it's only when Persia threatens to attack that they finally, at least some of them, decide to band together, Athens and Sparta being the main ones, to fight this aggression. And it's a very small group compared to what the Persians have, this huge army. But most of the Persian army is conscripted from the places they've already taken over. And, they're also kind of, it's like a whack-a-mole thing. Every time they turn around, somebody else is rebelling, and they have to go, put them down.
Right.
So, but they really wanted, there's this, for 100 years, Persia has been expanding and taking over more and more and more things. And they want Greece because Greece destroyed one of their cities in the previous war.
And stole their ladies, too.
That was
an important part.
But there's a certain hubris here. It's like you can see Herodotus saying, there's a point where what's the point? Why do you want to do this?
Enough is enough, yeah.
Right. And there's a scene at the end where after the Greeks have taken the Persians over, and routed them out, the cooks are left behind. So the head of the Greeks says to the cooks, it's like, okay, you prepare me a meal that would be like what the Persian generals would eat. And it's this fantastic, huge banquet of a meal. And then he has the Spartan cooks prepare a Spartan meal. That's where we get the word Spartan from. And it's not much. And he's looking at him saying, here, the Persians, they expended all this manpower, and they have all of this stuff, and they wanted our poverty. So it was really interesting.
Well, one thing to keep in mind, too, is that I pointed out in book group two, was that this is Herodotus, who's from Halicarnassus, but has a sympathy with the Greeks. And if only we had a Persian historian of the time to share their side of the story, we might learn a little more. Because Persia was quite, you don't get to be even that big of an empire without having some... it was a huge culture and a beautiful culture.
Herodotus he's pretty fair in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And there are places that that Persia takes over that they're pretty kind to. Basically, they don't, there's sometimes where they completely rout the people and they take all the women and children and make slaves of everybody. But there's other times where they say, just, you're fine. Just go on about your business and give us, some taxes. And we'll leave you alone to do what you want and to worship whatever gods you want and to run your businesses however you want. So they're not always tyrants in the way that we think of tyrants.
Yeah, not demonized in as much, but yes.
But sometimes they are. And there's brutality on both sides too. He's not squeamish about that. People act badly on both sides. People make mistakes on both sides. So there's some equity. But his heart is obviously with the Athenians.
You have one more quote for us before we got to go here.
This is towards the end of the book. It's Herodotus, really, saying, "If all mankind agreed to meet, and everyone brought his own sufferings along with him for the purpose of exchanging them for somebody else's, there is not a man who, after taking a good look at his neighbor's sufferings, would not be only too happy to return home with his own."
Good stuff. What do we have next month, Mary?
Oh, some more fun stuff. Plutarch's Lives, one of the first biographers known, and he wrote about Greeks and Romans, Alexander, Caesar, lots of good stories.
Yeah, all the heavy hitters of the old days, lots of good stories of old dead white men. And we'll be resuming as we do on Classics Now. Well, thank you for listening, and join us online or pick up a book and read along with us, and even join our group, and have a classic day.